completely drifting away. Chapter 4. Waking up for the sunrise turned out to be the best decision I could have made. Somehow, the alarm I'd set woke me up before anyone else. I slipped out of bed and opened the blinds covering the balcony doors. The world was that husky shade of shadow blue that happens just before the big ball of fire crests into view. I shook Sophie and Freya gently to wake them up before getting Delaney and Veda up too. We wouldn't be able to see what we wanted from our room, so we threw on some clothes and jackets and headed up to the main deck. The temperature had dropped significantly since we'd been on the balcony the night before, and the wind picked up speed more every minute as the sky lightened. There were no clouds about, and the ship had slowed, so the water around us wasn't as tumultuous. There were a few people on the deck already, but everyone was silent. It felt like I'd be breaking some unwritten law were I to speak and break the calm. The girls and I went to the front of the ship and stood next to the railing, facing east, not wanting to miss a second of what we'd rolled out of bed for. A quiet steward slipped through the scattered gatherings of people and passed out coffee, which we gladly accepted. As we sipped the steaming hot liquid to warm our bodies, the sun broke the horizon. For some reason, I held my breath when the first rays swept over the ocean at me. The wind stopped immediately, and we were left staring at the golden orange light bouncing off dark blue waters. As the sun got higher, the blue of the water changed, ever lightening, until it was a tropical blue-green just below us, and when it was completely over the horizon, the heat hit us. We looked out, soaking in the warmth and enjoying the feeling of somehow being thawed after a long winter. Again, it was most certainly worth waking up a little early for. Soon thereafter, a quiet buzz started up amongst the passengers on deck. Apparently, now was the time it was polite to talk, as long as we kept it muted. The girls and I opted to finish our coffee in silence. The mood slowly shifted, and I could feel each of us gearing up to head back to reality. Not only were we only a couple of hours from returning to our everyday lives, but I couldn't help but ponder on what Irving needed us for. By the time we returned to our cabin, vacation mode was nearly gone. Not to say we were in a bad mood by any means. Quite the opposite, actually. We were rejuvenated and ready to tackle life and all the curveballs it may throw. But there is always a bittersweetness to the shift from carefree to responsible. That feeling set in even harder when we glanced out the window and saw we were already within view of Shalorna. It really was a beautiful island. It sat off the Bahamas and had all the tropical wonders you could think of. The weather was nearly flawless, and the people who lived there year-round were a great bunch. I was happy to call it home. It didn't take us long to pack our things, as the stewards had done most of it for us while we'd watched the sunrise. We threw the few items remaining out in our bags and left them by the door as we left to begin the offboarding process. We decided to be closer to the first people let off the ship instead of waiting and getting squished in a throng of tourists that were merely sightseeing for the day before continuing their cruise. The first thing I noticed when stepping onto the ramp was the other cruise liner in the harbor. It was every bit as big as the one we were on, and it was anchored. Someone had to be on the ship to do that, but why hadn't they come off? I sniffed the air, but couldn't smell anything foul as Irving had mentioned. So whatever the scent was, it stayed rather close to its origination. Otherwise, the ship looked old. It wasn't in bad condition, it was just outdated. It was missing the mass of satellites and wires and electrical towers that our cruise liner sported, and the waterline stain around the helm was dark, indicating it hadn't been painted in quite some time. The girls and I looked at each other when we stepped ashore, and all of us took a deep breath. It was good to be home, but we needed to perk up for whatever we were about to learn about the ghostly ship. We didn't have long to wait either. We'd barely made it past the checkout station when Detective Irving greeted us.
"I brought a ride," he reported. "Good to have you back."
Sophie had seen him coming and ducked off to the side behind some other passengers. She didn't want Irving to get used to Sam being around, so she skillfully hid as she made her way to somewhere she could shift back into her canine form.
A ride?
I asked, standing opposite Irving from the direction Sophie was going.
A ride to where?
Freya's travel agency was within walking distance of the dock, and we'd planned on heading there first. Irving shrugged.
I wasn't sure where you needed to go, so I covered my bases.
Freya patted Irving on the shoulder.
Thank you, but we're headed to the agency. We can talk there.
We exchanged a few pleasantries on our way, and Irving asked the typical return from vacation questions. The moment Freya unlocked the door to her travel agency and we had ourselves inside, Sophie ran up to us, and Irving's demeanor changed. He took a look around us, nodding appreciatively of the tasteful interior design Freya had chosen, and then turned to us.
There have been a few developments since I last spoke to you, he began.
We moved to the sitting area, which consisted of several peach-colored loungers surrounding a dark wood coffee table, and sat down.
What kind of developments? Freya asked.
Actually, I cut in, start from the beginning. Not all of us were on the phone with you. Irving nodded his agreement.
The ship you saw out there pulled in during the night. There's no ship like that set to come into port. And there had been zero communication with anybody aboard. Hell, there's no clear indication on the hull or any visible markings. So we took a dinghy out to check it. The smell is horrid and unrecognizable. So we called for a hazmat team, who still hasn't arrived.
What do you mean, had been zero contact? Freya interrupted. Has there been contact since we talked?
Yes, Irving answered quickly. A local dock worker heard some strange sounds coming from the near main exit doors. He was very concerned that there might be people inside that needed help, so the city council decided that we could send a team out last night, armed with respirators, to check it out again. We had restricted instructions not to go inside. We had to pry the door open, even though we could see people on the other side. We didn't know why they didn't just open it, but we eventually got it open. We unloaded 9 passengers awaiting at the door.
9? That's it? On a ship that size, there should be hundreds,
Freya said, shocked.
Yep, only 9. We called into the ship, and there was no response. We had strict orders not to board, so we waited about 20 minutes, then closed the door and left,
Irving explained.
And? Delaney asked, sounding irritated. What did the passengers tell you occurred in there?
Irving shifted himself in his chair, looking rather embarrassed.
Not a damn thing. We asked every question imaginable to get some useful information, but got nothing.
Wrinkling my brow with confusion, I scooted to the edge of my seat and leaned forward.
9 people get off a very weird ship, and they gave you no information? What about the smell? The other people on the boat, their names, nothing? That doesn't make sense.
You're telling me? Well, we did get their names, but that was it. A rookie at the station could make a list of their identifications. Otherwise, they completely ignored any other question having to do with the ship, their origin, or their destination.
Irving sat back and put his hands up in frustration.
Where are these people now? Freya asked, concerned.
They're out and about living their touristy lives,
Irving said, defeatedly.
We had no cause to hold them. We let them know about the various accommodations in the area. In fact, I'm sure a decent amount of them ended up staying at the hotel you used to work at. Everything was quiet and normal until this morning.
It's only 8 o'clock. What could have happened already?
Veda finally chimed in.
The station got some calls from several Airbnb hosts in the area that the ship passengers had rented their places, but then left in the middle of the night without paying,
Irving answered her.
That doesn't make any sense either, Freya piped up. You book Airbnb with a credit card. There's no reason for them to be out money if the people left early.
Normally that would be the case,
Irving agreed.
However, none of these people had their possessions, and we don't have the authorization to get into the ship to get them yet. So the hosts did a handshake deal.
You're telling me that the resorts did a handshake deal too?
Freya scoffed.
No. Some local merchants on the city council who are trying to help sponsored the hotels. Before you ask, the hotel patrons didn't ditch out. It was just the ones in private Airbnb locations.
Irving suddenly seemed tired, clearly exhausted from the quagmire of the situation. Veda adjusted her glasses and leaned on the arm of her chair. How were these people acting?
As normal as anyone would imagine, I guess.
Irving sounded absolutely stumped as he recounted the situation.
It surprised them that they were having issues with accommodations. It was like they expected their rooms to already be booked. Others were slightly irritable that they didn't have their financial items, but nobody got unruly about it. When it came to questioning, though, it was like talking to a brick wall. I'd ask them where the people on the ship were or what the awful smell was, and they'd act as though they simply didn't hear me speaking.
He shrugged once again.
Okay, Freya said slowly. They won't acknowledge questions. Some of them disappeared in the night, and we still know zero about the ship or anyone else on it?
Yes, Irving confirmed. I don't know where to go from here until the hazmat team gets here and we get on board that ship.
Sophie put her paw on my foot.
Any report of the ones who didn't disappear last night?
She sent to me. Do you know what the people who didn't run away in the night are doing now? I asked for her.
Last word was they were out exploring the area around town. They've stuck mostly to the outskirts, though. As they aren't causing trouble, our hands are tied as to exactly what we can do to get some answers,
Irving reported. There was a few seconds of silence while we thought about what we'd learned, before Irving's phone rang and made all of us jump. He pulled it out of his pocket and answered,
Irving.
We watched as his face went from relaxed to intense. By the time he hung up, there was no doubt something was wrong. He placed the phone back in his pocket and stood up.
That was Tina. We have a dead body.